HFCC's Hammond Planetarium will be hosting a spring star talk titled Nothing Gold Can Stay from Tuesday, March 20th through Saturday, May 29th, 2012. It's taking place in the science building, room S-126. HFCC instructors Dale Van Dorp, the voice of Dearborn, and Susan McGraw will be the event's narrators. This event is free and open to the public. No reservations are necessary, and seating is available on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information, please contact Steve Murrell at 313-317-1536. And for show dates and times, check out hfcc.edu under the events page.
Join me, LaBeth, here at WHFR.FM. Together, we will enjoy a montage of music featuring various jazz styles, old jazz, blues in jazz, and jazz just as you like it. Listen every Wednesday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. here at 89.3 in Dearborn, the station making jazz waves like no other.
Mountain Stage, the internationally distributed weekly two-hour live performance program out of West Virginia and hosted by Larry Gross, has made the move to Wednesdays 6 to 8 p.m. Tune in for live folk, blues, bluegrass, and more right here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Again, that's Mountain Stage on its new night and time, Wednesdays 6 to 8, here on WHFR.FM.
Welcome to the Heights News and Views, a talk show program part of the WHFR Tuesday Forum series of talk show programs presented from 1 to 2 p.m. The Heights News and Views is a program presented live on the fifth Tuesday of any month. The program is devoted to interviews with prominent individuals on issues important to the residents of Dearborn Heights. You are listening to WHFR 89.3 FM Dearborn, making waves from the campus of the Henry Ford Community College located in Dearborn, Michigan. You can hear all of our archived forum programs on the internet by going to our website at whfr.fm. Select the option Forum. Wait for the option to select that Tuesday date for the program that you wish to hear by selecting the desired date. Now, to your host and director, Ned Apigian, for today's program.
Well, thank you, Melissa. Our guest today is Robert Constant, the 16th District Democratic State Representative of the City of Dearborn Heights. We have a couple representatives. Perhaps later we'll tell you who they are. But today's program is pre-recorded, so we want to bring that to your attention. And the important thing is that this program will be broadcast on May 29th, a Tuesday. Now to our guest, Bob Constant, and what we're going to do, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to introduce you to him. He's going to tell you about himself, where he was born and raised here in Dearborn Heights, and his history. And Bob, why don't you tell us about yourself autobiographically?
Sure, Ned, and good afternoon, Dearborn Heights City Councilman Ned Apigian and Jay. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm Bob Constant, the 16th District State Representative. The 16th District covers all of Garden City, Inkster, about the southern two-thirds of Dearborn Heights, and the northern third of Allen Park. I'm an attorney, graduated from the University of Michigan and University of Detroit Mercy Law School. Lived in Dearborn Heights all my life. I lived one block over from the house I was born in, and served on the Dearborn Heights City Council for 6 years, and then was elected the 16th District State Rep, which I ran for when the seat was open, when then Jim Plakis, the mayor of Garden City, was term limited and could not run again. And I've served in Lansing. I've never missed a vote. I have 100% perfect attendance and voting record, and was the same on the Dearborn Heights City Council. With my legal background and some background in finance, very interested and involved in the community, community service, and making sure our tax dollars get where they're supposed to in these tough budgetary times, make sure our local governments get the money they need to operate while at the same time being fair and not burdensome to our taxpayers. So that's a little bit about myself and my background.
How about you personally, your family, you're married, your children?
I've been married for 24 years to my wife, Kim, and I have three children, 20, 18, and 14, two in college and one in high school.
Well, that's a mouthful right there, right? And how long were you on city council?
About 6.5 years. I was a council chair pro tem for a few of those years, in fact.
Okay, so that pretty much tells us about you, in case there's anything else you want to say.
Jay. Well, I'm gonna jump right in here. Yeah, this is Jay Koronik, folks. Hi, Bob. I always ask this question because you know public service is a wonderful thing. We need very good people to represent us to get the right laws passed and to get things positively changed. What attracted you, or what was that stimulus that first got you, let's say, to run for city council and then to continue to want to be in politics? It's a rough business in a way, and sometimes quite stressful. So tell us about that motivation. What was behind your wanting to get involved in being an elected official?
And it can be rough, but it can also be very rewarding. And I think we need good people in public office, and we have a lot of good people in public office. You know, I've always been involved with the community, past president of the Dearborn Heights Kiwanis Club. I've run the Ecorse Creek cleanup for 20-some years in Dearborn Heights, the vice president of the Goodfellows, and active at my church. And I wanted to be involved and help serve my community, and I thought that was a good, you know, appropriate way to do it.
Was your father involved? Did that help you?
Yeah, my father actually was... moved to then Dearborn Township. We moved from Detroit and was on the Charter Commission that helped draft the charter when we went from Dearborn Heights, went from Dearborn Township to Dearborn Heights.
So your father's an attorney too, right?
Yes, he...
we needed to cover all those things. We got it out of you in the end. Your father's an attorney, and
he's
been involved in a lot of things you missed at first.
He worked at Dodge Maine as a metal finisher, was a member of the UAW, and had fought in World War II, and was able to attend college on the GI Bill, and became licensed as an attorney and had an office for many years, in Dearborn Heights, and then in Dearborn.
And his practicing name was?
Clarence Constantakis.
There you go. Good Greek name.
I'm Greek, Italian, and Polish.
There you go. Okay. I think that pretty much covers your autobiographical issues, unless Jay has another one to ask. But... I'm hoping that the audience has a pretty good insight as to who you are. You're a family man, you're married, you're an attorney, you've been involved in Dearborn Heights issues for years, and you neglected to mention that you are also a candidate for county commissioner. Why don't you tell us something about that? That goes along with your state rep, and why don't you tell us something about
that?
Yeah,
I'm running for Wayne County Commissioner for the 8th District. Because of redistricting, Dearborn Heights was in the 9th district along with Garden City, and Garden City is no longer in the district. Now the district is southern.
What do we got now? Yeah, explain
southeastern
it.
Corner of Livonia, Redford, and Dearborn Heights.
All of Redford, all of Dearborn Heights.
Correct. And the southern corner of Livonia. You know, we've really seen this area.
It's a minor, small section of Livonia, isn't it?
About
is it about what it always was?
10,000
No,
residents.
I meant the same area it was when you...
A little smaller because the population in Wayne County has dropped.
So it's a little bigger, not smaller.
In other words, the number of
households in the part of Livonia.
Previously, Livonia was not in the district, but the overall district and the number of people is a little bit smaller because the district numbers have dropped. But what I'm concerned about in this area is, you know, the recession we're facing, our auto industry, which was the backbone of our economy in this area, is, you know, we're competing now globally, and the manufacturing jobs that all my, you know, family and neighbors had are going to, you know, other cheaper labor sources in other countries. And I want to make sure that those jobs are replaced with, you know, some good-paying jobs and our middle class is protected. And, you know, I just, when I'm going around going door-to-door campaigning, a lot of UAW retirees and concerned about getting their
pension taxed.
Yeah, they're pension taxed. The you know, benefits that they're receiving cut back, and you know they're older and they can't go out and get another job. They're on a fixed income, and they're concerned, and I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the tax shift away from our bigger businesses towards our middle income people and our seniors. And well,
Later on, we're going to get into how the rules of the state government is going to affect individuals. But right now, to conclude the first part of our program, the first 10 or 12, 13 minutes about you personally and your campaign, you want to add something else about your campaign before we get into the part that I... As I mentioned to you, we're going to talk about how the federal government affects what happens to us locally, how the state government later, and then what happens in the county and the city. So if there's anything else you can add pertaining to your campaign.
Absolutely. And I'm concerned about economic development and economic development in Wayne County and making sure that, you know, we continue down the road of economic development in these tough budgetary times. And I was able to get an additional $270,000 for the 16th district in what's called the Economic Vitality Incentive Program, or EVIP money, and also able to get some, you know, additional dollars for Dearborn Heights. And we need elected officials that are working full-time and on the job, doing the job, not sleep at the switch. As you know, being in the legislative branch of city government, the legislative branch of state government, which I serve in, and the legislative branch of county government, the most important thing that the legislative branch does is the budget,
right,
and the overseeing of the budget. And it's often perfunctory. We have a saying at the state level that the governor proposes and the legislature disposes. In Lansing, the last year or so, we've had what we call a rolled-up budget, where we get the budget from the executive branch. It doesn't have the detail or the line items that past budgets have had, and then it's just voted on as a whole. And unlike at the national level, our governor, our executive branch of government in the state of Michigan has a line item veto, and I think it's important for the legislative branch, for the checks and balances, to oversee that budget and to look at it carefully and making sure that the dollars are allocated where they need to be, and that programs that are effective are funded and programs that are not effective are not funded. And I think it's important that we make sure that every dollar we have is used properly to provide our citizens the goods and services that they're entitled to.
Well, that is the challenge of government, isn't it? Sometimes things are presented to you and you can't take them and you can't leave them. It's you know, it's like being invited to dinner. You don't know what's being served, but you're hungry and you got to eat. So take it or leave it. When you're the minority, you don't have much to say about things.
Yeah, we've got a lot of hard choices. The current administration, for example, is talking about our budget surplus, and with the a budget the size of the state of Michigan, you know,
it's what is that number?
Question over $40 billion a year.
$48 billion.
$40 billion.
$40 billion.
And you know, to say that we have a surplus is somewhat academic and somewhat deceiving.
This is a good point to stop for me to make a station identification. But before I do that, I'd like the listeners to understand, he just told me something I didn't know. The state budget is $40 billion. The city of Dearborn Heights' budget is something like $36 million. Look about it as the same, $40 billion versus $40 million. It takes $1,000 million to make a billion. It's considerably different. Now, I'd like to remind our listeners, you are listening to the Heights News and Views as part of this station's weekly talk show format on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m., presented here on WHFR, making waves on 89.3 FM from the student radio station broadcasting from the Henry Ford Community College located in Dearborn, Michigan. Our guest today is Robert Constant, the 16th District Democratic State Representative, and who is planning on running for County Commissioner in the 8th District. And this is a pre-recorded program which will be heard on May 29th. I am your host, Ned Apigian, bringing you this program, The Heights News and Views, on the 5th Tuesday of any month. You can rehear this archive program on WHFR.FM on the internet. Select the talk show format key, then select forum, and then select the date. And today's date is May 29th. And if you find this program interesting, you could have your friends listening to it all over the world. Now back to our guests for more questions. And what we're going to do now, in order to give a little bit more substance to where we're going and where we want to end up, our next segment of 12 or 13 minutes will be devoted to federal programs that affect the states. And Bob will explain in a couple sentences at his pleasure what kind of federal programs we used to have that we don't have anymore, what kind of federal programs we have now so you could see the difference, and what kind of federal programs he anticipates for the future. Those will be the three questions I'll ask him in this segment. So what did we used to have that we're not going to have anymore, Bob?
Well, when our President Barack Obama got elected, we had several challenges nationally, the collapse of the financial markets and the recession, which we were led into by the collapse in the housing market and the mortgage market. And we had, you know, two wars that we were fighting. So to get the economy going, we had the ERA money, you know, the stimulus. And what I saw happen, unfortunately, was a lot of the stimulus money, which was to go, as you recall, for shovel-ready projects and so forth, ended up
keeping school teachers on the job, policemen and firemen on the job for an extra year.
Filling holes in budgets, and so maybe not creating the jobs that we had hoped. And it's amazing how much of our state budget is dependent on federal money and these federal programs, and how important it is.
What kind of money are we talking about?
That our state government
gets
properly leverage the dollars we spend at the state level to get the maximum amount of the federal dollars for transportation, for Medicare and Medicaid services, mental health, and just a whole variety of things. Every year, the state of Michigan misses out on additional federal dollars that we could get because we may not have spent the state dollars that we need to spend. And
so
you know,
what is, how can you explain why that is? What do we need to do?
So, for example, there's something called maintenance of effort. We will get, the state will get a certain amount of federal dollars based on the amount of state dollars that we spend for different programs, like, for example, Medicaid. And if, you know, the Medicaid is cut back, then we lose those matching federal dollars, the matching funds. Same thing with transportation and our roads.
What did it historically, what was it historically in the recent past? What is it now? What do you think it'll be in the future? That's the important issue, money.
Yes, there was. We were getting a lot more money, and now
roughly as a percentage, is it 10 million, 5 million?
I would say as a percentage, we're probably getting 70% or less of what we used to get because the state is spending less. And you know, they're different views.
How much money is that? That's a percentage of what? How much of it of our $40 billion budget are we talking about?
And that's
4 million, 4 billion. What?
It's hard to say a particular percentage,
close,
but
just approximate.
There's different views on, you know, state spending and macroeconomics. Whether it's better to cut taxes and to stimulate the economy through tax cuts or to prime the pump and spend state and federal money to, you know, get the economy moving. This is, you know, the issue that's debated at the state level. It's debated at the national level. And the point is that as our state spending contracts, then so does our matching federal dollars contract. As far as an exact percentage, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would say it's, you know, it's a lot less. And then the same thing is true at the local level. You'll see that.
We don't want to get into that now. Right now, it'll disturb my logic of federal, state, and local. I'm
sure,
a logical
sure.
thinker. Otherwise, I'd be the shotgun approach. Well, if we're spending $40 billion now, presumably, Michigan State's budget 10 years ago was $50 billion. Is that a possibility? So our revenue sharing from the federal government was bigger. Now the budget is $40 billion. I'm just wondering, the ratio is the word I'm looking for. The ratio of federal participation in our budget is getting smaller, that's for sure. I was just trying to figure out what the magnitude was. If it's too hard to take a guess, we'll have to be satisfied. And how about the future? It's going to be less yet?
Yes.
Or will it stabilize? Is it like our housing values in the city where my house value came down another $600 taxable dollars this year? If that keeps up... That definitely affects the city's budget. But my understanding is the state's budget's been stabilizing.
Well, and that's you hit the nail on the head, Ned. The values are shrinking, and our economy in Michigan is shrinking. Our state budget, which is, I think, a little, you know, in excess of the $40 billion, but that's just a round number to talk about.
Yeah. But they've been finding more money than they thought they had lately, too, which I don't understand. You know, can you talk about that?
Our costs and our expenses, you know, go up. Our rising health care costs, which are baked into just about everything, you know, keep going up and up. And so the state budget, the actual dollar number, may not actually be less than prior years, but as a you know, percentage of overall spending and in match to the federal government, it's shrinking. You brought up a good point, the surplus, and there was talk last year about taking state money and putting it away in the rainy day fund, the budget stabilization fund.
Well, you need a rainy day fund anyway, don't you?
And that's
10%
something
of
that
your budget?
The on the one hand, the state should have been doing, you know, way back when times were good, so that we don't have to raise taxes during a recession. But these last couple of years, if there was ever a time to be taking money out of the rainy day fund and using it to maintain our educational programs and our schools and our universities and so forth. I think these last couple of years have been very tough. And so this year, the talk is of an actual tax cut, which, you know, may be coming out now because it's an election year. And again, we you know, don't want to tax our residents. We want to have them to be able to keep their money in the pocket. But with a budget as large as the state of Michigan, to talk about actually a very small tax cut, I hope is not going to be just an election year gimmick. We have people on fixed incomes. They're losing their jobs. They're losing their houses. Right. And we want to make sure that we maintain the social safety net that needs to be out there and provide the people the services they, you know, might especially need in this hard economy.
In our next phase, we'll talk more about what the state can and cannot do. But right now, in terms of the federal government's participation and help to us, in other words, states' shared revenue for the states, which comes from the federal government, we're not anticipating that to grow.
The state shared revenue is actually the
I mean, what the federal government gives the states.
The state shared revenue is actually from the state sales tax.
No, I know that. I'm not talking about what does the federal government give. Is that shrinking? Now it's less than it was in the past. It's going to get less.
Those matching dollars, correct. Those matching federal funds. Right. When we spend less at the state, we get less in the federal match in Medicaid and in transportation and in other areas.
But
correct.
Some people complain the federal government puts mandates on the states that aren't paid for. What are we confronted with in that respect? This is the negative aspect of what the federal government doesn't give. It gives you a curse. Republicans always complain. What's the word they use? We have unfunded mandates put upon the states.
And
they would like to take all the programs the federal government has and have them funded by the states. Then I guess you won't see too many programs. So are we confronted with a lot of unfunded mandates provided from the federal government to us? Required and not provided. That's what I want
I don't
to know.
I don't think so.
Well, that's good.
Let me give you two examples very quickly. One was the No Child Left Behind, and one of the problems with the No Child Left Behind, which was an education initiative under our former president, President George W. Bush, was that there were different, you know, programs and requirements, but not a lot of funds to go with them. So you could call that an unfunded mandate. Another example was after the Bush-Gore election, the changes to the election law. So all our election equipment needed to be updated and, you know, new mandates regarding our way our elections are conducted. But again, not a lot of dollars to follow those new mandates from Washington.
That's passed now. We should have passed that point, right? We've had several.
Correct.
Okay, so you're satisfied that in terms of the federal government's aid to us, for lack of a better word, financial participation in giving us funds.
The matching
is less than it used to be, to summarize it conceptually. I like dealing with concepts. Details will get everybody lost. And you don't anticipate that to increase or remain the same or perhaps go down. So that gives us a picture of the federal government participation. Its requirements upon us is not going to be any different in the future. So the listeners will know we're not being penalized again with a second go around of, oh my God, we're losing more money. In other words, it's costing them. We don't have any more unfunded mandates except the Medicaid aspect. Is that growing or getting smaller? Because that's a huge amount that has to do with health insurance.
Yeah, and I think as our citizens lose their employer-sponsored health insurance, for example, our Medicaid need and the money we need is going way up. So, you know, that's the $64,000 question. You know, the social safety net is needed then when times are tough, and the need goes up when, you know, the money is least there and least affordable.
So that takes care of, without being specific, it seems like it's a vicious circle, yet there are people opposed to having some sort of national health plan that would hopefully control the rise of the cost of health care for all of us, as opposed to those of us in small groups. I don't know what the answer is to that. Just in addition, I learned today. Yes, Jay, you have a question?
I was just saying, Bob, it's not, not nothing you can do at your level, but I know some people in the Democratic Party, you know, they're really concerned about the constant rise in health care costs and even Medicare costs, but that could be handled by the federal government getting involved in regulating the cost of prescription drugs and even health care payments, as it wouldn't necessarily go to universal health care, that is Medicare for all. But how do you feel about that? I mean, containing cost, I mean, the health care for people, especially people that need it, that don't have it, that can't get it other ways. Do you think the as long as we're still with the federal government, and we're going to go to some public service announcements here, Ned, but just to conclude the segment, how do you feel about containing the federal health care cost? How do you think it should be done?
Yeah, very, very important debate. And, you know, funding important programs like Medicare, Social Security, with our baby boomers aging, and, again, increased need and decreased funds, as, you know, we don't have a robust economy and a lot of people out there working, very critical. And the healthcare debate, the national healthcare debate, you know, there are different systems. We have the single-payer system like they have in Canada. We have the different private insurance companies competing with a public option. That's the model that was passed and signed by the president. These are very important debates. I have in my district Garden City Hospital, community hospital. They're all about ready to close. Why? Because they're doing more and more uncompensated for care, and they should. They're a great hospital. They you know, people come to the emergency room and they need treatment. And in the olden days, maybe that person was the sibling of a auto worker, and they had the Ford, GM, or Chrysler health insurance, and now they have no insurance, and the Medicaid rolls are full, and they're doing more and more uncompensated care. And
well, and it's costing us $1,100 for those of us that have health insurance, more for everybody, and no one seems to realize that.
And it's that uncompensated care and the expense of that, the hospitals and, you know, other things in the system absorbing it, and, you know, all the money is in specialization that our citizens aren't getting the primary health care that they need, some of them, and having, you know, problems where they're health problems where they're not able to work later. And so the right sizing of that and the proper funding of our health care system and controlling those escalating costs, that's a very, very difficult and very important question.
Okay, now we're going to have a public service announcement to give our listeners a break as to what we do here at the Henry Ford Community College.
Henry Ford Community College gift cards are a great way to show your support for someone in your life who is seeking the skills necessary to fulfill their dreams. Available in values from $10 to $100, gift cards can be used towards payment of tuition, purchasing books and supplies, lab fees, or even a lunch at Skylight Cafe. Gift cards can be purchased at the campus bookstore or online at collegestore.hfcc.edu. College gift cards. What better way to encourage a student in your life than with an investment in their future?
Hi, this is Peter Sagal, host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. What do you get when you take a bunch of public radio nerds and shut them in a room with computer geeks? Well, in addition to some bizarrely socially awkward offspring, you get the Public Radio Player. It's a new iPhone app that streams hundreds of public radio stations, including this one, straight to your iPhone and iPod Touch. You can get more information at publicradioplayer.org.
Is the logical thing. Well, guess what? We're back. And you are listening to the Heights News and Views as part of this station's weekly talk show format on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. and here on WHFR, making waves on 89.3 FM from the student radio station broadcasting from the Henry Ford Community College located in Dearborn, Michigan. Most of us on the station are graduates of the program, Henry Ford Community College, as I am, and some of us are still students and haven't graduated yet. Our guest today is Robert Constant, the 16th District Democrat State Representative, and he is also a candidate this year in the 8th District County Commission District. And of the city of Dearborn Heights and a couple of our adjoining sister cities as well. I am your host, Ned Apigian, bringing you this program, the Heights News and Views, on the fifth Tuesday of any month when that should occur. You can rehear this archive program on the internet by going to whfr.fm and select the talk show button, you see, and then select the forum button,
Tuesday
and then
forum.
Tuesday forum, and select the date. And today's date is May 29th, 2012. You can check into any former program by looking at whether we had a fifth Tuesday in that month. Now back to our guest for more questions. And Bob, why don't you tell us about the positions you hold in the state legislature, because now we're going to talk about state government, how it used to affect us, how it is affecting us, and how it might affect us in the future, either positively or negatively. Tell us about your committee assignments.
Sure. So I serve on the Tax Policy Committee. I'm the minority chair. And then I also serve on the Local Government and Regional Affairs Committee. And I'm on JCAR, the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, which often attorneys are on. And that's a joint committee with the House and the Senate. And they oversee the adoption of the administrative rules that implement many of our new laws.
What in the world are they, administrative views?
And so that's some legislative oversight of that process. The committee used to be a lot more powerful. So, for example, if we pass a law regarding the Lake Michigan shoreline and a rule regarding access of the Lake Michigan shoreline, then the administrative rules, the DNR and so forth, that implements those law, those administrative rules, the adoption of those administrative rules have to have some legislative oversight, and that's what the JCAR committee does. We just heard a lot about JCAR because they passed on the rules regarding the collecting and keeping of childhood obesity rates by doctors. And many of my Republican colleagues felt that that was an invasion of privacy. And so the JCAR rejected those administrative rules, allowing for the keeping of statistics, really without names, of child's weight and height and so forth, to keep track of our state's obesity and childhood obesity. I also serve on the Judiciary Committee, And the Judiciary Committee just went through...
Are there all lawyers on the Judiciary Committee? Not in the federal government, I don't think.
No, and also not in state government. And this year, I'm one of only about six attorneys, I think, that are on the Judiciary that are attorneys. The rest are non-attorneys. And we just went through the Judicial Resources recommendation from the State Supreme Court and the combining and... elimination of some of our probate courts, some of our district courts, and some of our circuit court judge seats, and the adoption of concurrent jurisdiction plans and many other things on the Judiciary Committee.
Right. I know in Dearborn Heights they were talking about us sharing a district court.
Right.
Dearborn doesn't have that problem. But
And there's talk in Dearborn now of going from three judges to two judges. And whether, you know, that will save money because the city is the control unit. My predecessor, Jim Plakis, the rep before me, introduced a bill to merge the Garden City District Court with the Dearborn Heights District Court because Garden City does not have a courthouse. And the
we
need
do.
Of judges in Dearborn Heights and Garden City is reducing. And I've reintroduced that legislation. We hired a... National Center for State Courts to do a study on five communities.
And I remember.
What would make sense and not make sense regarding possible merger or joint operations of some of the district courts. So these are the things that we look at state government. Of course, the main thing, or one of the main things, is our educational system, which is run at the state level, our colleges, our universities, and our K through 12, kindergarten through 12 education system. The teachers' benefits, their salaries, their retirement, our curriculum, the merit curriculum, what the former government passed, the universities, our public universities, all are creatures of state government.
Okay, so revenue sharing. How was it when you first became a state rep? What is it now, and where do you think it's going? What percentage of Dearborn Heights' budget used to be like $4 million, if I remember hearing, and now it's less than $1 million, $800,000 or so?
Yeah,
I remember.
And I believe...
What was the numbers when you started? What do you think's going to happen with that?
So when I started and we were, you know, I came from local government and went to Lansing, you know, fighting for every dollar we could get in our state share revenue. There's the statutory portion, which simply means the money that is appropriated by the legislature. And all money in Michigan is spent through appropriations. So for money to be spent by the state, it has to be appropriated. And the statutory portion of the state share revenue is the money appropriated by the state. And then there's the constitutional portion. The new governor and the new administration cut the statutory portion by one-third. And that hit different communities differently, different communities in the 16th district. It affected them differently. There were certain requirements.
What's the constitutional percentage that is different?
As far as the constitutional portion, that's guaranteed by the Constitution, so that remains pretty much constant.
What is it? 20%, 10%?
It's not really a percentage. It's an amount. Of the percentage of the city of Dearborn Heights budget, I would have to, you know, look that up and have the budget in front of me.
So the constitutional share is constant, and they changed the statutory by a third.
Cut a third, and then they...
By appropriation by the legislature.
Correct. And the governor has the EVIP program, Economic Vitality Incentive Program.
Does that have anything to do with the Act 78 and 51 gas money and all that stuff?
No, that's separate. That's
78 is a retirement.
That's the you know, the different names for the different you know, acts, public acts that, you know, set forth the laws to how we fund our roads or our retirement.
Jay would like to ask.
Well, I'm just jumping in. I think I know what you were referring to here, Bob, just send me straight on this, is that the even though the appropriation to the cities has been cut back, the revenue sharing that Ned was mentioning, the governor has just set some criteria to get the additional funding. Now, some things seem a little crazy to me, like the each city must have its a dashboard of
yes.
its certain criteria for how well they're doing certain categories on their website. And I know the city of Dearborn has actually worked it through and qualified, but it some of it seems like just sort of window dressing, silly stuff.
And there must be issues.
In other words, there's strings attached now from the legislature, and some communities maybe they don't even have a website. I don't know what they do for their dashboard then.
They could have a website, but nothing interesting on it. Maybe.
So actually, has Ned's question, has Dearborn Heights been able to, or my question to both of you, has Dearborn Heights been able to qualify for these little strings to keep their funding sort of?
The only thing I know that every once in a while our controller, when we ask what's happening, is this number that you're giving us include all the state revenue sharing? And his answer would always be, well, you don't know exactly what that is. And then sometime you hear, well, it's more than I thought, so I don't know. I know the number 8, I get bombarded by somebody numbers, and I'm sure Bob gets more. I try to sort out things so I can think about them conceptually as opposed to. And I the number of $800,000 seems to ring in my head.
So you have a dashboard on your Dearborn Heights website?
And we do.
Okay.
Here's what happened. The idea, this is all the area of transparency in government and accountability, some would say. So all the cities were required to develop a dashboard. And
is that our five-year plan that we have to meet in terms of our income and expenditure?
And that was the deficit reduction plan. That's a little different. But
that's the big thing. I don't remember hearing the dashboard.
The dashboard, and now there's a new, the latest state of the state address, the governor talked about a scorecard. Having available to the citizens of a city certain benchmarks or metrics, as the governor calls them, dashboard and to show the spending that's being done in the city, how the money's being spent, so that the citizens can see, you know, where their tax money is going. And the Economic Vitality Incentive Program, or EVIP money, there were certain, called it grants, but it's really that one-third share of the state-shared revenue that...
state-shared revenue from...
That was taken away, that... is you know being given to the cities, they compete for it. So if we have a joint program with another city, like for example in Dearborn Heights, we did the court study, and so
but that didn't go over too big.
We got some money for that, or the joint IT project with Dearborn.
That was very good.
We got some EVIP money, if I recall, for that programs like that.
So what we have to do is we want to leave the last 15 minutes for sure to talk about our local government, the county, and the thing. How would you wrap up our discussion of state government's ability to help cities, townships, communities?
Well, I think we're seeing, unfortunately, you know, with this recession still going on, and we see, you know, Detroit, Pontiac, Highland Park, Benton Harbor, Hamtramck, even Allen Park.
Taylor, all those are getting on the list.
Talk of financial emergencies, City of Inkster. And, you know, we need to make sure that our local governments receive the statutory revenue sharing and other things they need to provide those essential services to our citizens, our police, our fire, and our other services. And, you know, with the tax values of persons' homes dropping.
Could you?
It's almost a perfect storm.
Right.
That, you know.
Except Act 345. Why don't you explain to the people what that is? What in their taxes constantly goes up, of which they got nothing to say about?
Well, and you'll hear.
Explain that Act 345.
You know, different taxpayer rights groups complain about the increase in the, you know, on their property tax bill, their Act 345 millage payment or their school taxes or just, you know, the value of their homes and their property taxes in general. And these are all different parts of our different millages that we see on our personal property tax bill. And understand that the real property tax bill, your property taxes for your house are just part of the overall source of income, you know, that the state gets.
Right, but the people are complaining, well, you're telling me my taxes are coming down. And we had this community meeting. And he says, what's this one that goes up? That's the Act 345, which in 1963, it was passed at one time that was it. The one time passed, there's a percentage. It goes up constantly all the time depending on a percentage. It's a ratio, and it has to do with funding police and firemen's pensions only. That's what it's all about, the 345.
Yeah,
and if people had the chance at every election to approve that millage or disapprove it, it wouldn't be there. They have no control over it unless we get rid of the Act 345 from 1963. Is that possible?
Oh, don't do that.
No, sure, it would be possible, and just like we have, Proposal A, we have Headley Amendment,
right.
And these are all different parts of our state tax code and the property taxes that homeowners pay. And again, there's the sales tax, there's the property tax people pay, there's the state income tax. There's the corporate income tax, which used to be the Michigan business tax, which used to be the single business
tax. I got to make a station identification. We got about 12 minutes left. Go ahead, Jay. You want to ask?
Well, in the time remaining, let's just keep rolling here. Now we're with Representative Bob Constant, who's 16th District Rep to the state
of
Michigan.
Talk about the county thing.
And we'd like to talk about, of course, a couple of Wayne County issues, but one that's kind of the state. It's also Wayne County and affects Dearborn big too. Bob, I know you have a strong opinion. Tell us about the situation with the proposed, and maybe it's going to happen soon, the repeal of the personal property tax, really just the repeal of, to me, it's more the repeal of the business property tax. But tell us how that's going on, why it's happening, and how you feel about it.
It absolutely is a misnomer.
Yeah. Sure, Jay. So there are several different types of personal property taxes in the state of Michigan. Utility personal property, commercial personal property, and industrial.
What's utility? That's
You'll see sometimes in rural areas these big transformer farms, you know, the booster stations for the utilities. Those are taxed in some townships. Those are up to 30-40% of their tax base, and that's not being touched. It's just the industrial personal property tax.
So the utilities don't pay the tax, or they do?
No, they do, but that's not being
repealed. That's not being repealed.
So the discussion is to repeal the personal property tax.
For industry.
For industrial personal property, because it's a disincentive for our manufacturers who are, you know, we're still a manufacturing center of the world here in the Detroit area. And to repeal that personal property tax and to give more of an incentive for manufacturers to locate here.
And then make the individuals pick it up.
And then the problem is, you know, someone's going to have to pay for those police and fire services and other services that industrial personal property owner uses, and it's going to have to come from somewhere, and we have to make sure that it's not shifted to our homeowners. The discussion is to phase it in over a period of years and to replace about 80% of the revenue. Our Lieutenant Governor, Brian Kelly, who's originally from Dearborn Heights, has been working on that along with myself and other legislators. I'm really of the view that now, with so many other financial pressures on our cities and our townships, now is not the time to talk about further reducing the revenue that our cash-strapped cities and townships have to operate. So if the industrial personal property tax is repealed, that revenue needs to be replaced so those cities and townships can continue to provide the services they need to provide to those, you know, the taxpayers, including the individuals and the businesses in their cities and townships.
Yes, as you well know, Bob, and as Mayor O'Reilly has said on my show on Fridays, it's the personal property tax. Again, that's if you grab the corporate buildings and shake them, everything that falls out that's not bolted down is the property that's being taxed there. There's some
all
value
the tables
to,
and chairs
right.
And everything.
And it's 20% of the Dearborn budget now is being paid for by the personal property tax, mostly coming from Ford Motor Company.
Sure.
It would just be a killer to lose that. Even if we lose, let's say 80% is made up, we're still losing 20% of that 20%. That's a death knell for a lot of services.
How about the commercial properties which have desks and tables in them?
Yeah, so that is not being affected.
That's not being affected.
Not being repealed. So for example,
for listeners in Dearborn Heights, we don't have any industry to talk about.
Yeah, we have some, but we hopefully will get more. I worked with the Armored Car Group, for example,
right,
making sure they locate in Dearborn Heights and some other groups. But take a cinder block building. You have the cinder block building, and really, if you have a factory, the value there in the operation is in the industrial personal property. And we would love to have no taxes. We'd love to have a tax-free zone so we'd, you know, get all our businesses to locate here.
Well, that's also a TIFA project for us. So
we need to provide, you know, the goods and services to the area, the city, and, you know, have the money to do that. And again, if the...
Well, that's going to be a good project to bring to Metro Dearborn Heights, building armored cars to be sent all over the world, Jay. Not only that, passenger vehicles, armored vehicles, and the engines, and that's the kind of thing that belongs in Metro Detroit. That's
absolutely
for sure.
Absolutely. We've been a manufacturing center. We will continue to be. We're the auto capital of the world. We make the best American-made cars and trucks, and we want to continue to see that industry thrive here.
You're a candidate for county commissioner. Now, the commission being on, can you explain to the what the county does for the city of Dearborn Heights?
Sure. So
we pay them a lot of money for sewage disposal. That's a giant number that comes by every couple of weeks at our meetings, a quarter million.
Yes.
Explain that. You know, what do they? We ever get? We get stuff from them. They collect our delinquent taxes, Jay, from building and banks. And then we end up getting them, the county makes us whole, and then they try to pick it up. We do some.
So
tell the listener something about these kinds of things the county does for us and we do from the, which are major expenses.
So the wastewater treatment plant down in Wyandotte that is operated by Wayne County is an example. Ecorse Creek is designated a creek and not a river, and therefore it's under the jurisdiction of the county. Our county roads.
I hear
roads.
The Corps of Engineer calls it a drain, which means it's a lot different than a creek or
the county roads that we have, which the county has the responsibility to pave and maintain, and some senior programs, a whole host of things that in Redford Township, for example.
So the county's a big help to us.
Because Redford is a township, it's a more limited form of government, and so the county's role there is bigger. And for example, over roads, when Phil Cavanaugh was the county commissioner, he was able to get a lot of the roads in Redford paved, including set the stage for. 7 Mile to be paved, and now where a lot of the roads in Redford were dirt roads, they paved.
Yeah, I noticed. Why were they dirt roads there? Because the county decided not to spend the money.
So in Dearborn Heights, our local roads were under the jurisdiction of the city.
We pay all our stuff is paved. I've never seen.
But in Redford, the local roads were under the jurisdiction of the county, and so the. Maybe it was a little slower in getting them paid.
Okay, Bob, why don't you wrap up the program before we go on our closing and give your contact information. And
lot to talk about. It's been a pleasure to be here this afternoon.
And we brought some information to the people.
If anybody has any questions, comments, or needs any further information regarding the state government or regarding myself, please contact me at, you can reach me via phone at 517-373-0849. Via email at bobconson@house.mi.gov or my home phone, 313-292-6500, home email rkconson@comcast.net. Very involved in government and like to talk to you about it and answer your questions, your important issues facing us in government.
Come to your fundraiser. What date is that? And they can talk to you all they want there, right?
They can at come. Stephens. Please come just and have a dinner if they'd like, just to stop by. Thursday, May 31st, 5:30 to 7:30 at Stephens Banquet Hall on Warren, just east of Telegraph.
Okay, Bob, thank you very much. I'm hoping that our listeners enjoyed this and learned something. I try to learn something all the time when I do this. That's the reason I ask questions I do, not just out of curiosity. And I hope to see you all, our listeners, again in the very near future on the fifth Tuesday of the next month, which is in August. Jay?
You have been listening to the Heights News and Views, a live talk show program part of the WHFR Tuesday Forum series of talk show programs from 1 to 2 p.m. The Heights News and Views is a program presented on the fifth Tuesday of any month. The program is devoted to interviews with prominent individuals on issues important to the residents of Dearborn Heights. You have been listening to WHFR 89.3 FM Dearborn, making waves from the campus of Henry Ford Community College, located in Dearborn, Michigan. You can re-listen to this and all of our other archived forum programs on the internet by going to our website at whfr.fm and select the Tuesday date for the program that you wish to rehear by selecting the desired date. Thank you very much for listening to the Heights News and Views today.
WHFR, Dearborn.
Hi, this is Peter Sagal, host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. What do you get when you take a bunch of public radio nerds and shut them in a room with computer geeks? Well, in addition to some bizarrely socially awkward offspring, you get the Public Radio Player. It's a new iPhone app that streams hundreds of public radio stations, including this one, straight to your iPhone and iPod Touch. You can get more information at publicradioplayer.org.
This is Usher. I spent years mentoring youth and have seen how volunteering and service teaches young people the skills they need to become leaders and sets them on the path for success. This is about you. It's about your power. It's about creating change on your terms by volunteering. The truth is, you can do anything. Join me in answering the president's call to service. Go to serve.gov today. This message is brought to you by United We Serve and the Corporation for National and Community Service.
Hey, this is Scotty Robinson with a gospel music review, encouraging all of you loyal WHFR listeners to tune in every Wednesday night between the hours of 10 p.m. and 12.